Thank you for tuning in to the Essential Church Podcast, a church where we focus on restoration over denomination. If you're in the Virginia Beach area and would like to find out more about Essential Church, visit our webpage at essentialchurch.com.
All right, so how many of y'all seen Ferris Bueller's Day Off? Anybody? Anybody not seen that movie? Come on, really? Well, I can't chastise you too much because it's a PG movie, but the language in it's like, how was this a PG movie? How did I see this back in the sixth grade? You know that movie's almost 30 years old, believe it or not? Isn't that crazy? Feel old, don't you? Yeah. But it kind of really kicks off exactly what we're going to be talking about this morning. I just want to kind of give you a little feedback, audience participation, kind of question moment here. Do you think Cameron feels loved by his dad? Who does Cameron's dad love? The car. You notice I said, who does he love? And you said car. And as a matter of fact, he even says, you know, my dad loves this car. You know, who do you love? And he says, this car. Who do you love? This car. And would you say Cameron's dad have a good relationship or probably a dysfunctional one? That's probably good enough for all the questions for now. We'll kind of come back to Cameron and his situation in a little bit. And it kind of pulls us into what we're going to talk about this morning. In this series, we've been talking about the family pieces, about how do we put together the pieces of life for our children so that when they grow up, they'll understand how life works. And then in the same way that they need to learn about physics and about Newtonian laws of gravity and things like that, they also need to learn how life works. There's laws of responsibility, that there's things that you're responsible for. And the part of parenting is transferring the appropriate amount of responsibility to our children at the right age. Because you can't keep doing things for them forever. Otherwise, when they get to be 25, 30 years old, they will still be depending on you to do everything. And then we talked about the laws of sowing and reaping and how you will reap what you sow. And so, and this can work in your favor or it can work against you, because whatever you do now, you have a huge impact on your own future just by what you do right now. And it's going to come back on you later and greater. It's going to come out even better than you imagine or even worse than you imagine. And then this week, we're going to be looking at another law that we go back to Genesis to look and find, and it's about the relationship we should have with people and things, and that when God created the universe, when he created the order, basically he was coming out and saying, listen, you're to love God and love people, and you're to use things, and you're to use things in such a way that it helps you love God and love people. But a dysfunction happens when you begin to love things more than you love people, and that's where Cameron's dad went wrong, is he began to love a thing, a car, more than he loved his son. And so there was all kinds of issues and problems in their relationship. And it's so funny, almost all of these things, you go back and you find them rooted back in Genesis, where all these laws come in. And sometimes I'll have people say to me, well, the problem with Genesis is that it's not a scientific enough account for me. And I come back and I say, well, here's the deal. You may get frustrated that it's not scientific enough, but I'm also glad that Genesis is not just a scientific explanation. What I'm really thankful for is that God tells us more than just physics in Genesis. He tells us about life and relationships and a lot of the principles that we need to know about how life works. And another one of these principles that comes out is the relationship of people and things and what do we love and what do we use. And he starts off in Genesis 1, 26, and he says, then God said, let us make mankind in our image and in our likeness, so they may rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air and the livestock and all the wild animals and all the creatures that move along the ground. So he says, your role to creation was to rule over. And then a couple of verses later, he says, and to use it. And so our relationship with creation and created things is to use them and rule over them. And then you read in the next chapter that God creates man and woman, and he says that the two shall be united, and they become one flesh. And it says, and Adam and Eve were both naked, and they felt no shame. I mean, so you see there in chapter 1, he says, your relationship with the things is to have dominion over them, to rule over them, to manage them, and to use them for your benefit. And your relationship with people is that you would have this loving and intimate relationship between the two of you, and that I want you to have a loving relationship with me. And that's what you see in Genesis 1 and 2. And the problem sets in whenever you reverse these two, whenever you switch these two around. And if you go into the very next chapter, what happens is that Adam and Eve, they begin to love a thing more than each other or more than their love for God. And so God says, listen, if you love me, just do this one thing for me. Don't touch this, or don't eat this tree. And so sure enough, they go over there, and she gets enamored by it. And she begins to have a love for it. You see it in there. She's enticed by it. She's enamored by it. And so she sees that it does look like it's really good. And so she chooses the thing over the relationship. And what happens right after she chooses the thing over the relationship, what it says is, as a consequence, what ends up happening is that he says, listen, sweetheart, you're going to want to control your husband, and he's going to want to dominate over you. And that pretty much summarizes the state of marriages today, is there's this issue of control and domination. Why? Because instead of loving people and using things, we begin to want to use people for our own ends. And so we want to control the person we're with or dominate the person we're with because we want to do that in the relationship so we can get more things or more stuff or serve our own needs. And so we mess this whole thing up. And what happens is that there becomes relationship conflict and disunity comes in. And so that's relational conflict between us and God and relational conflict between us and other people. And I don't know if any of y'all posted this on my Facebook account. I mean, maybe y'all seen this on Facebook. There was an article this past week about this guy who's like laying on the ground cuddling with a cow. Anybody see that? Am I the only one? Do I just, I'm the only people I know have weird friends? You saw, did you share it with me? Are you the one who was, no. I was just trying to figure out. I don't remember who it was. I figured maybe I could call him out and find out this morning. It's this guy laying on the ground spooning with a cow. Now, some of you in this room are messed up and you think that's sweet. Okay? That's messed up. That is messed up. And if you're a card-carrying PETA member, we'll have another conversation another time. But all I'm saying is that I don't have a problem with, you know, treating animals okay. But when you begin to treat a cow like it's a person, and instead of like feeding and caring for the animal in a proper way out in the field, you're cuddling up with it and wanting to get a blankie and go to sleep with it, that's a problem. There's just a dysfunction there. And you see, you're supposed to rule over the cows and the beasts of the field and use things for people, okay, and for love, to show love. You don't begin to love the thing and then use that thing in such a way that it abuses or hurts people. And what you saw with Cameron's dad is he loved the thing so much, he abused the relationship. And you see, a car can be a great tool to be used for people and to take them out for a special day or a special date. I mean, how many of y'all were able to use your dad's car for prom night? Three of you? Wow, okay, all right. Well, here's the thing. This message is for you. Let's deal with our emotional scars a different time, but let's just focus on you and not the relationship you have with your dad. So moving on, I'll just say there may be some issues there growing up that still hold true. Wow, whew, I wasn't expecting those stats. But once again, we're to use things to show our love to God and people, and we're to, if we begin to love things, we're going to be using people and try to use God. And this is a theme you see throughout Scripture. It starts off in Genesis. You see this dysfunction happen. And this is a dominant theme throughout Scripture. And you get all the way down to like towards the end of the book of the Bible. First John chapter 2, he says this. 1 John 2:15, he says, "Don't love the world or anything in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in them. For everything in the world, the lust of the body, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life, doesn't come from the Father, but from the world. And the world, his desires are passing away, but whoever does the will of God lives forever." And of course, he's talking about this, like the stuff that we chase after and lust after and want after. And when he says the lust of the body, the Greek word there is epithymeo. And the word, the prefix epi is one that we know in English. Like when somebody talks about the epicenter of a volcano or epicenter of an earthquake, what are they talking about? The center, the place where it's most intense. Like when we had the earthquake hit Virginia, we all had a little bit of a rock, but we weren't the epicenter. It was somewhere up north where like patio furniture fell down. And so that was where the epicenter was. So the epithumeo means where we were focusing all of our desire, a very intense desire on something. And what you're going to see here is, listen, there's nothing wrong with stuff. There's nothing wrong with having stuff. The problem is the epithumeo of stuff. Like, is it wrong to have a nice car? No, does God ever say it is a sin to have a nice car? Do you think though God would say it is wrong to epithymeo your car, to make it the epicenter of your life? Remember what he says? This car is his love. It is his passion. It is his epithymeo. It is the center of his life and his affections. Do you think, we don't know anything about his dad. Actually, Cameron's dad didn't even make an appearance in the entire movie. But just what you saw from that clip, do you think that Cameron felt like as if he was at all part of the center of his dad's love and affection or attention? Knowing what you know about him, do you think maybe his wife was an epithyo? Or do you think that was at all the center of his love and affection? No, because things had replaced the people in his life. And he says even there, he says, my dad is going to what? Kill me. Why would you kill a person over a car? It's because the car is more important than the person. It's become an epithymeo lust after. And so it says the lust of the body, the lust of the eyes. These are those things that make us happy. We look to them for our joy and for our happiness and our fulfillment. And it's whether we consume them or use them or look at them, whatever it is. He's just saying you've got these things that you want to consume or look at or use or just have in your possession. And it's a dysfunctional issue in your life. And when I think about the stuff of life, we love our stuff, don't we? I mean, just isn't life all about stuff? One of the greatest rants ever is from George Carlin talking about stuff. And I can't show it in here because he intermixes too many colorful pieces of language into it. But I will do my best impersonation of George Carlin because the truth is the truth. And it almost is funny enough, even without his wonderful delivery. Let me make sure I get the opening line right. He actually says in there, the whole meaning of life is finding a place for your stuff. That's it. The meaning of life is finding a place for yourself. You notice Cameron's dad had that beautiful garage for his cars and his stuff. But the whole meaning of life, he says, is to find a place for your stuff. What is your house anyway? It's a place for you to store all of your stuff. And you feel at home at your home because it has all of your stuff. And you feel good around your stuff. And whenever you get too much stuff that it won't fit in your home, what is it? It's time to go get a storage unit. There's a whole industry out there based on nothing more than somebody keeping an eye on your stuff. And right here, all of you who are here today, when you left your house, what did you do? You locked it up because you don't want anybody coming in and taking your stuff. Because if they come in your house, they always take the good stuff, right? They don't leave the bad stuff. They take the good stuff. So you don't want them taking your good stuff, so you lock it up. And you drove here today in your car, which has this compartment in the back that you can also lock up called a trunk. And we have that so we can put our stuff in our trunk whenever we're out and about to bring it back to lock it up in our house. Some of you that don't have a car with a trunk. No. You got too much stuff. You got to have a truck. You got to have a full-size truck. You got to have a semi-truck called a Suburban that you can haul around all of your stuff, right? Because it's all about the stuff. And when you get so much stuff that it won't fit in the trunk of your car or the back of your truck or in a storage unit, it is time to get a new house to fit all of your stuff. And so in the process of moving all this stuff, you say, hey, there's some of this stuff I don't even want anymore. And here's a crazy thing. There are people driving around every Saturday just looking to see if you'll put your stuff in front of your garage and they'll buy it from you. And they'll give you money for your stuff because they want your stuff. And what do you do with the money that you get from selling your stuff? Y'all know it. It's you. It's your life. You go and you buy more stuff and then you get a bigger house to put in all of your stuff. And the problem when you go over to somebody else's house is it's full of all their stuff, and it's ugly stuff, and who would ever buy this stuff, and why would you ever put this stuff on the wall? And just to make yourself feel a little bit more comfortable at their house, you bring some of your stuff over to their house. But then you got to find a place to put your stuff, and so what do you have to do? You got to move their junk so you can put down your stuff, because that's what their stuff is to you. It's junk. Their stuff is junk, and your stuff is stuff, so you got to get rid of their stuff, get rid of their junk so you can put down your stuff. And so he goes, this whole rant's hilarious. And obviously, it kind of connects with many of you all in this room. And if you laughed at any point along the way, it's because you can identify with the issue that we all have with our stuff. We protect our stuff. We insure our stuff. We wash, wax, and clean our stuff. We have special closets designed to hold all of our stuff. We want more of the closet and give you less of the closet because I got more stuff, right? You can put your stuff in the garage. I don't care if it's your tuxedo shirt. Who cares? You can put that stuff down there so I can have more stuff in the closet. We can have an issue with stuff. I actually read a stat that said we in the United States spend more money on trash bags to throw away the stuff we no longer want than 90 other countries in the world combined. Yikes. Anyways, so he says we got all this stuff because it's and it becomes the epithemeo of our life and leads to the pride of life. What is the pride of life? Well, I have this sense of pride because I'm a little bit better than you because I got a little bit better stuff. I got nicer stuff. I got more rare stuff. I got more expensive stuff. You only wished you could have this stuff. I'll invite you over to my house so you can do what? Look at my stuff. Oh, you want to play with my stuff? No, get your own stuff. Or sometimes you even see this. You see where your kids will invite friends over and say, hey, watch me play with my stuff. Isn't this fun? Yeah, look, I got this new game system. Here, watch. You want to watch? Oh, you want to play? No, you might break it. No, I know that they made these game controllers to be indestructible by a 4-year-old and you're 10, but even still, I'm afraid you might break it so you can't touch it. It's my stuff, right? And we get a little possessive over our stuff. And at some point you have to come in and say, listen, it is easier and cheaper and quicker to fix or replace stuff than it is people or relationships. Let me ask you this. Do you think it would be easier, quicker, and cheaper to fix that car after it went out the back of that garage than it would be to fix the relationship between Cameron and his dad. Ferrari, by far. You know, whatever it costs to fix that thing up, it's going to be a lot cheaper than the years of therapy and counseling that's going to take to fix and mold that relationship. It's going to be a lot easier, that's for sure, because nobody wants to have to change that kind of thing. Let me ask you this. Do you think, though, that Cameron's dad bought that car with the intention of loving that car more than his wife and kids? Maybe, I don't know. You really are down on the guy. Sorry. We'll talk about your own issues later. No, I'm just kidding. Moving on. So if you talk out in church, that can happen. So anyways, I don't think he bought that car with the intention of saying, I really need to find something in my life that I can love more than my kid. As excited as I was to have a boy, I really want to have a car so I can love that car more than the boy. I don't think that happened. I think he loved his son. I think there was a great relationship with his son at one point. And I think somewhere along the way, he bought that car, and slowly but surely, there was this gradual shift where he began to love that car and love that car and worship that car and have that car become the epithemeo, the epicenter of his passions and affections. And you see, here's the problem with this message. Every one of us in here right now is thinking of somebody else who needs to hear this, or maybe you're elbowing somebody, or you're thinking of somebody else right now. But the reality is, every one of us has a problem with this. Do you realize this is the most common or most predominant message that Jesus taught in the New Testament? Was this issue about loving stuff and using people or God to get more stuff because of your love for stuff? Do you realize that? I don't think it was the most common thing he talked about because there was one guy out there who needed it, right? I think it was the most common thing he talked about because most people are struggling with it. And the problem is, greed is one of those things that we just can't see in the mirror. Yeah, I said the word greed. Greed is where you love stuff more than people. And you're thinking, well, I thought greed was just about money. No, you read in the scriptures. No, greed is about the love of all kinds of things. One of my favorite stories, I say favorite stories. I got tons of favorite stories in the Bible because they're all hilarious. One of the great stories in the Bible is Luke chapter 12. Jesus is just like teaching. He's just teaching and giving a regular old sermon. It has nothing to do with stuff at all. It's not a stuff message, not a money message, nothing. And this guy like gets a moment where he can ask Jesus a question. Now think a moment. If you could ask Jesus any question, what would you ask him? What would you ask him? You know, like how did the whole, was it a big bang? Did you just like speak it? How did that happen? I mean, would you ask him that? Would you ask him who wrote the book of love? Why do fools fall in love? How did Gilligan get off the island? What would you ask? What would you ask Jesus in that moment, right? Well, this guy takes his one shot to ask Jesus a question. What does he ask him? Hey, Jesus, can you tell my brother to give me my stuff? That's it. He says, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me. I want my stuff. I want what's coming to me. I want half. And my brother won't give it to me. And Jesus looks back at him. He's like, man, who appointed me as arbitrator over your stuff? And what he's basically, what he's going to say, listen, you love your stuff so much, you're trying to use me and my position and authority and my presence to get stuff. Do you see that? When you love stuff, you will use God and people to get stuff. And this guy has one opportunity to ask Jesus a question. And of all the questions he wants to ask, he says, Jesus, I want to use you and my relationship with you, my capacity with you, or my audience before you to get stuff for me. You're like, well, I would never. What do you pray about? What are our prayers about anyway? We thank God for the stuff he's given us, and we ask him for more stuff. That's kind of what we do. And so he comes and says, Jesus, give me, you know. So Jesus diverts. He says, all right. He says, listen, watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed, all kinds of greed. There's more than just one kind of greed. There's more than one kind of greed that deals with just money. There's all kinds of greed. And then he says after that, life does not consist in the abundance of possessions. All kinds of greed. There's all kinds of greed. And the problem with greed is you can't see it in the mirror. If you have a problem with this right now, you cannot see it. You can't see it. Do you think Cameron's dad knows that he's not loving his son? Do you think Cameron's dad is aware of the fact that he loves his car more than his son? Do you think he's aware of all the dysfunction in the relationship between him and his son? No, I think if you were to ask him, do you love your son? He'd say, of course I love. What do you mean? What kind of question is that? Do you love this car more than your son? No, I mean, I love the car, but of course I love my son more. I guarantee you his dad has no clue. In the same way that you're sitting here right now thinking this message is for somebody else. Because you have no clue how much you love stuff more than you love people. So Jesus goes on to tell a little story, and he says, there was a certain man who had a lot of stuff, and he thought to himself, what am I going to do with all my stuff? I've got no more place for my stuff. I'll tell you what I do. I will tear down this house and build a bigger house for my stuff. Now, by the way, this is Jesus speaking, not George Carlin. But it's hilarious how similar the two are at this moment, right? I mean, and if you know George Carlin, you know Jesus, there are no two people on the face of the earth that are more, you know, different than these two. I mean, George Carlin was a stout atheist his whole life, hated God, and here they are speaking the exact same thing. You know how that happens? They're both speaking truth. And I always say, all truth is God's truth. And whether you find it in the scriptures or you find it from observing life, one thing about comedians is they're very good at observing life. And so George Carlin can stumble upon truth. And what happens when he stumbles upon truth unknowingly? He says the exact same thing that Jesus says. I just think that's remarkable. So he says, yeah, what do? We need a bigger house for all our stuff. And I can have all my stuff in this bigger place. And I'll say to myself, I got plenty of stuff laid up for many years. I can now take it easy and enjoy all my stuff. But God said to him, you fool. This very night, your life's going to be demanded from you. Then who's going to get all of your stuff? And this is how it'll be: whoever stores up stuff for themselves but is not generous towards others and God. And once again, he comes back. What is the purpose of stuff? To be used to show other people love. When we use our stuff to show people love, it's called, anybody? It's a G word. Giving or generosity. When somebody's given you stuff, what do you say about them? Wow, they really are generous with their stuff. It's because they gave you their stuff or let you borrow their stuff or let you share their stuff. Something we're always trying to teach our kids. You need to share, you need to share, you need to share. Why? Because people are more important than the stuff. And you see this principle in scripture over and over again. You can use stuff for relational purposes. That's what the whole purpose of having the stuff was. I gave you all this stuff, and I wanted you to have a relationship with me, and I want you to have a relationship with each other. So use and rule over this stuff in such a way that you can build a relationship with me and build a relationship with others. And right after Adam and Eve, what happens? They have two boys, Cain and Abel. And they have a problem with this issue of loving stuff. At least one of them does. It says over in Genesis chapter 4 that these two boys were there, and it came time to give God a gift. They both want to give God a gift, and so make sure I can find it in here, somewhere in here. There's Genesis chapter 4, verses 3. It says, in the course of time, Cain just brought some of his fruit from the soil as an offering to the Lord, but Abel brought an offering of the fat portions of some of the firstborn of his flock, and the Lord looked with favor upon Abel and his offering, but on Cain's offering, he did not look on so with favor. So Cain was very angry, and his face was downcast. Now, the first time I heard this taught, honest to goodness, I heard a guy actually say that what was going on here was that God favors shepherds over farmers, that God, you know, favors the meat over the vegetables. And now, as much as I wanted to agree with that take on this passage, I had to go and say, that's not really what he's getting at here. If you know me, then you know what's going on there with the vegetables. So what ends up happening here is it says, if you notice with Abel, it talks about something very unique about his gift. It says he brings the fat portions of the firstborn. That's a way of saying, my firstborn, which is the best of my flock, the very first of what I have, I'm going to give the very best of my best. So he goes and looks at his flock, and he finds the firstborn and the fattest of the firstborn. And he says, God, I want to give you the best of my best. Now, what does it mean when somebody gives you a gift that comes from the best of what they have? Do you feel loved in that moment? Yeah, like when somebody, like, and they go shopping for months on end, just find the exact perfect one. When there's a story behind the gift, isn't the gift even better? You know, like when somebody's like, yeah, I found this at the gas station. Here you go. You're like, oh, thanks. Appreciate that. Okay, whatever. But when somebody says, here's the deal, I searched all over, and I know how much you really love this, and I called every dealer in the country. That is the only one available in your size, and I had it shipped here on a horseback out of Egypt, and then it went over to Cairo, and then from Cairo went to Morocco, then went on a slow boat, and I finally got it here just in time and paid express shipping just so you could have it on your birthday. And you go, wow. Because when somebody's going to go through that kind of trouble, you feel loved, don't you? The best of the best. It says, but Cain's like, oh God, you want something? All right, here you go. You know, it's when it's like, oh, stink, your birthday's tomorrow. All right, I'm going to swing by Kohl's real quick. Clearance rack. All right, excellent. And you run on home on the way. And here you go. And there's something missing there, isn't there? And it's the same with us and God. It's the same with you in relationships. Is you see, when you use things and you don't care about your stuff, and you use those things, whatever you have, to give a gift of love to somebody, they feel loved. But when you look at it and you get stingy or greedy with your stuff and you say, well, I don't want to spend money on that. Think about how you shop for your friend's birthday party. Or sorry, your kid's friend's birthday party, right? You tell your kids, all right, $5 limit, $10 limit, whatever it is. You go into Walmart, $20 limit, whatever. You go in there. You walk down the Lego aisle. Okay, yep, perfect price. Chuck in the basket and just keep on walking, right? But your kid, oh, no, your kid. You go shopping all over to find them the exact one that they want, exact, you know, kind they want, the color they want, whatever it is. Why? Because there's a greater love there. And when you're willing to use your stuff and use your things to show people love, they feel loved. But when you try to love, when you begin to love the stuff, you'll find that you use people to get more stuff. And when that happens, you have relational dysfunction. But the problem is it's so subtle, we don't even realize we're doing it. Jesus would say, nobody can serve two masters. You're either going to love one or you're going to hate the other. You know, you're going to love God or you're going to love money. You know, what is money? Money is the ability, the power to go get stuff. And there's some people, they don't want stuff. They just want the power to get stuff. My kids love having money. You know what they do with money? They don't spend it. They go to the store and they walk around and go, how much is that? I could buy that. How much is that? I could buy that. What's that? I could buy that. Oh, me and my brother combined, we could buy that. Well, why don't you buy something then? No. Because then I wouldn't have the power to buy whatever I want. You see, whether it's the money that gives you the power to get whatever stuff you want, or whether it's just the stuff itself, it can become, there's nothing wrong with having stuff. There's nothing wrong with having the money. The problem is when it becomes the epicenter of your life. And when you love that stuff more than you love people. And the problem with this is you don't even know you do it. Every one of us in this room has a problem with this. Every one of us. And yet every one of us in this room is thinking there's somebody else who really needs to hear this message a lot more than I do. Because why? Because you see it in them and you see how they're loving their stuff more than they love you. But they don't see it and you don't see it when you're doing it to them. So the questions for your application this morning is, you know, with your kids, you know, you don't just teach them to share, you teach them why they need to share. You need to share because your sister, your brother, your friend is more important than this stuff. If this stuff breaks, we can either buy you a new one, or, but here's the deal, we cannot buy you a new friend. So this relationship, we can't buy you a new sister or a new brother. That's why we share, because people are more important than things. And things are just a tool that we use to show other people love. So we want to share and give freely of our stuff. Why? Because people are more important than our stuff. So we teach them how to share and share. It's right. It's okay for things to break. It's okay. Things are fragile. Things are going to get broken. This stuff isn't going to stay with you forever. When you die, you're going to have to leave it all behind anyway. And there's two ways to live life. One is he who dies with the most toys, is it wins or still dies? You see, there's one way to live life. He who dies with the most toys wins. The other say he who dies with the most toys still dies. I say week after week after week in here that the whole purpose, the whole meaning of life is that you would establish a loving relationship with God that you'll enjoy for all eternity. Either that's the goal of life, establishing a loving relationship with God you'll enjoy for all eternity, or the goal of life is to get more and more and more stuff. It's one or the other. And how you live your life and what you do with stuff and what you do with people in relationships, because that says, if you love me, you're going to love people. If you love me, you're going to love people. Your love for me is going to be expressed by your love for people. So are you going to use your stuff to show love and be generous, or are you going to hoard your stuff, be very greedy and stingy with it, and not show love to anybody and not have eternal relationships? And that's why he talks to him here. He says, in this world and its desires pass away. This is back in 1 John 2, verse 17. This world and desires will pass away, but whoever does the will of God lives forever. Whoever has this relationship with me is going to live forever. And also with ourselves, application time. What is it that you own right now that if your kids or your spouse or were to break, lose, or destroy, there'd be a lot of relational tension in your marriage or in your house? Go ahead and whisper to them what it is, and I'm going to have them go home and break it today. Oh, it just got real, didn't it? It just got real all of a sudden. We were all hypothetical for a second. No, I'm not actually going to have them do it. I'm not going to have them do it, but you're nervous about them maybe doing it, aren't you? You're nervous. You're afraid. You're afraid they're going to try a Ferris Bueller just to see if you love. I'm not asking if you go do love tests. Don't do that. Don't test. Don't tempt. You know, Jesus wasn't all about, you know, going to tempt and test love. But just think about that. Next question is, how do I show love to the people in my life and to God by giving my the best of what I have? How am I using the things that I have to show my love for God and the people by giving of the best of the best of what I have? And if I'm not, is that just one more indication of how much stuff has a hold on me? Let's go to God. Father, this is something, if we're honest, and it's so hard to be honest here because we can't see it. So maybe right now we can just, in faith or in trust, just accept for a moment that maybe, just maybe, I may have a problem with this. May I be bold enough to ask the people in my life, what is it that you feel I love more than I love you? And Father, that we might forgive those who have hurt us, and ask that the people that we have forgiven might also forgive us. I think that's what the Lord's Prayer says in the middle of it. And Father, may we learn to be open-handed with our stuff. We might use that stuff to show people love and to show you love, and not make the stuff the center of our life. And in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Thank you for listening to the Essential Church Podcast. Let me encourage you to pause for a moment and reflect on what you've heard. It's not the hearing of the word, but the application that makes all the difference.